to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
We'll buy him, gang.
I see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. As I'm always, Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. Maddie's over there with him, hovering around like a mother hen or something over there. What do you call, would you say Maddie's like your mother when it comes to the board, David, over there?
No, I never said that, Tom.
No, I don't think you would either. Well, just saying. Well, talking about softball and cold weather a little bit this morning. Maddie Weber played a doubleheader last night. And I'm going to say it was the hour between games that was worse than the games. Just saying. Dow futures down 22, S&P futures down a whole 75 cents. NASDAQ futures up 20 bucks. Yesterday was a very slow day. Everybody's waiting for the alleged stimulus package. Now we're down to the supposed bipartisan groups, $900 billion. And then, what's his name? McConnell says he's only in for $500 billion. So we're still sort of at an impasse, but it looks like there's some movement going on. Lou, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, sir.
What's the good word? What is the word?
I guess the word is softball in Chicago in December. Holy cow.
Well, when you have a whole bunch of rainouts, that's what happens. We had rained, I know that the gentlemen here were in a Tuesday night league, and we had rain every Tuesday for like a month. It was not the best.
So how long do you guys extend the season, and when's the first big snow coming?
Well, that was it. Last night those guys are over, but of course the league doesn't do anything intelligent like have an off night during the week where, you know, somebody can make up games or anything. I mean, there's nothing like that. Come on, Lou. We don't do anything crazy like that. And matter of fact,
if you guys, I mean, was this the World Series then, the doubleheader?
Oh yeah, they had the doubleheader. And Lou, I'm going to ask you a very personal question. I hope it's not like Viagra related or anything like that.
No, I'm not. I'm not naked, sitting in a room surrounded by animal heads. If that's what you were going
to
ask.
No, I was going to ask, when was your first notice of when it came to sports and aging? When did it come down on you to say, hey, I'm not as young as I used to be? At what age?
I noticed that I was not recovering as quickly from swimming activities. That was the first tell. Probably in my late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, it's kind of.
I would say late 20s.
I mean, you were more of a accomplished athlete than me, and as a boxer, you probably knew before 30 that you were losing something there, I would guess.
Yeah, but I wasn't punching people. I boxed in college, but my you know, endurance sport and recovery sport was swimming. I mean, I weight trained and some stuff like that, but I swam regularly, and because I had ready access to a pool, and I think I noticed it. I would say probably in my late 20s when I was in law school, that I just wasn't recovering as fast as I was when I was 18.
How did you pick swimming? It's such a lonely sport. I could never get into that. You go from by an hour and a half, and you don't talk to anybody. You don't say anything. You don't compete. Well, you compete with a clock, I guess.
Well, first of all, I wasn't swimming just an hour continuously. I was doing, you know, I was doing intervals and things like that. So when you're doing that with a watch or off a timer, you know, you're thinking and while you're swimming, you're constantly, I mean, swimming is so dependent on form. I mean, because of the water resistance that you're constantly, thinking about, okay, you know, this arm is here. This arm is here. This kick. My kick is off, or I'm not riding as high in the water as I should be. So you're constantly adjusting. Or at least I was constantly adjusting your body position, especially on something like intervals. A nice leisurely swim. I mean, it's almost not quite like being in a sensory deprivation kind of thing, but it does remove a lot of outside input that that just allows you to think.
So what,
if I
wasn't
focused on time or something like that, you know, you can think about all kinds of stuff while you're swimming.
So what does it say about Stacks and Jacks that our most lefty guy and our most righty guy are both avid swimmers?
I don't know, but you know, swimming is a long swims. If you do long swims, and I have friends who do, I mean, it can be quite contemplative.
See, I was totally. I always, when I worked out, I always thought that the best way to push yourself was to play against somebody else, because then you had to go their speed, not yours.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're in competition in swimming, you're constantly aware of where everybody in the pool is that you could see. But you know, even when you're by yourself, you're always competing against the clock. If you're doing that kind of training, You're constantly watching, you know, how many seconds it's taking you to complete one lap or two laps or whatever. And, I mean, you can really, you don't need a competitor to push yourself when you're, you know, as you come off the last turn or the second of the last turn on a 200 or 300 yard swim, and you're aware, hey, I'm not as fast as I was, or I'm behind in my lap or whatever. You picked that up.
Were you did you swim at Air Force? Because Frank was a letterman at Notre Dame.
No, I played football at Air Force.
Boy, I don't imagine so many guys playing football also swim. That would probably be
it's a bad. I don't recommend it. It's a bad combination.
Yeah,
I did that through high school, and the muscle, you know, the muscle types are completely different. And it probably took me a month and a half to 2 months of swimming to get my football muscle, you know, reworked from that, you know, that bulky muscle that you carry when you're playing football, to the longer, smoother sort of endurance muscle that you have when you're swimming. And then alternatively, when I finished swimming, I had to go on a fairly significant weight training program to tighten all that back up. Swimming muscle is not what you want when you're running into people, and football muscle is not what you want when you're trying to do a swim, even a fast swim, which has more explosive power.
I remember the guys who could even at Notre Dame, the guys who were really in shape at football, they'd come and play basketball the first couple of days, because we were all pretty decent basketball players. I mean, I was not as good as those guys, but you could see that those guys. I was having them dragging, and they'd be like a cornerback, because running up and down a basketball floor back and forth is different than even being a cornerback in football.
Oh yeah. I mean, football endurance. I played recreational basketball when I was on active duty, and you know, the joke was that very few things got you in shape to play basketball except playing basketball.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because of the explosive nature of it combined with the endurance nature of it, it was funny when I would transition and start football practice. If I'd been doing a lot of swimming to for endurance work, and then coupling it with weight training, the football drills were almost easy. I mean, I wasn't really even breathing hard, but again, the muscle types are just completely incompatible. You can get hurt if you go in without making a good transition from swimming muscle to football muscle.
Well, I used to play a lot of handball and basketball. I played basketball probably three nights a week, and then I played handball, you know, 4 days a week. And I could play as long as you wanted to play, pretty much, Lou. But one day I was like 35, and I got in this all-day tournament. You know, I was never an A player, but I was a pretty good B player, which, you know, back when people played a lot of handball, you got to be a pretty serious guy to be a good B player. I mean, it wasn't...
Yes.
I mean, you were nothing like the A guys. I mean, you were nothing like the guys that... I went a couple times and played at Rainbow Beach at 7 on a Sunday morning, and I just didn't belong there. I mean, I look at those 10 guys, and I go, these 10 guys are among the top 30 athletes in the city. What am I doing here? type of thing. You know, totally ambidextrous, you know, those kind of guys. I was never like that, but... I'd sign up for his all-day tournament, and I won my first two matches, one after another. Then I had like a 2 hour wait, and I barely scraped myself together for that one. And then I had like another 2 hour wait. I was toast. I mean, I was like, I should have been in the bar long ago. I had no business two hour waits at age 35 to go try to play again. I mean, I was just, I mean, my body just said, hey, you already played twice, you big dummy. What are you doing? And, yeah. You know, the recovery from that, it was, but I could have kept playing 4 hours in a row, I think, you know, or it wouldn't have been.
Well, I mean, for me, it was a little more dramatic. So I was at, so I must have been like 30, 31. I was a Holloman in New Mexico at the Air Force Base there. And we were having some kind of a swim competition, intramural kind of thing. And you're swimming in an outdoor 50 meter pool. At base had a beautiful training pool. And so Olympic sized pool, 50 meters. And I was doing, I want to say I was doing a 200 individual medley because I was one of the only people in the unit that was, I was representing that could swim butterfly. And I remember, about three quarters of the way through, so I'm finishing the breaststroke and coming off the wall to start my last leg of freestyle, and I am absolutely dying. I mean, coming off the wall, I'm going, what is going on here? Why can't I? You know, I've always got freestyle's my best stroke. I mean, I should be just fine. And I came off the wall and was just really struggling. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, at the level of training that you've been doing, you should be better than this. You should be stronger than this. I think swimming, again, because of the resistance in the water, swimming exposes the smallest lack of coordination, the smallest inefficiency, the smallest incorrect technique gets exposed very quickly when you're swimming because of the heavy resistance of the water. And you can feel it. It's happening. You can feel that you're not riding as high in the water. Your arms are not lifting as high. Your pull with your hands or your kick is not as efficient. And it's very apparent if you've been doing it a lot. And I've been doing it a lot. And I just realized, you know, you're not 18 anymore. You can't trained at that level and expected to have a recovery fast enough. So that was sort of my epiphany that.
Well, these Olympic guys that go on like older. These Olympic guys that it's not just that they win the six or seven medals because there haven't been many people that did that, but a few. It's the idea that they're running, they're swimming against the best people in the morning and doing it again in the afternoon. It's like it'd be different if every other day you got to do it, but that's not what's happening.
So let me give you. I follow swimming, so I have some insight in this. So I would swim when I was in shape. I would swim two workouts a day, between 5,000 and 6,000 meters each workout, and that was high school swimming. You know, I was reasonably good at it. I wasn't an Olympian or anything like that, but for a high school athlete, I was okay. So that 5,000, 6,000 meters, that was a workout. So Phelps, and I assume other Olympians are doing this as well, when Phelps would finish a race, like a 200-meter or 400-meter race, he would then get into the practice pool and swim another 3,000 meters to warm his body down and clear the lactic acid. And that was his relaxation.
And the guy used to eat like 5,000 calories a day, or 8 or some number too.
Oh no, he was at 10,000.
Wow,
he was at 10,000 calories a day, but the idea that you would swim basically half of a full workout to move the lactic acid out of your muscles and to relax after a race, and that this would not have an impact on the next time you had to go out there and go as fast as you could for 400 meters. Is just incredible in terms of the level of conditioning.
So he wouldn't just go to the bar after playing basketball like we did.
No, he doesn't go and drink a Gatorade or something like that and say, "Okay, I'm ready to go."
Where's the fun in that? Will?
The science on endurance sports, especially, is has changed so much. But again, the goal is to clear the lactic acid to keep your body, you know, moving, or keep your cardiac system engaged, so that you don't have a drop off, or rather a long, slow decline, so that that everything gets flushed out of your system. I mean that's
wild.
To have that level of conditioning is amazing.
Hey, I have a question for you. Two things. As we zero into the other news, our buddy Frank, who's going to come on later, I was talking to him last night. I've loved him, Frank Grieve, especially the other day, since somebody called and asked if he was an agnostic, right? He was all outraged. But as we talk about giving the vaccines to people, right?
Good. You're anticipating one of the points I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, well, so Frank said something that would never fly, ever fly in this political world we have, or in this class world we're getting. But it's so simple that I said to him last night, I go, Frank, nobody will ever go with that idea. And he goes, what do you mean? You like it? I said, of course I like it. That makes two of us. Think of the class world we're in. Now, how simple is this, Lou? We've talked to men, or I've talked for now months, about the class deal where the people who essentially wait on you are essential people. And we don't give a rat's behind about them. We don't count them. We don't do anything. The guy who delivers your Amazon, the guy who's working in the Jewel to make sure that the place is stocked for you, the guy who delivers your sandwich from Jimmy John's, we don't care about any of those people, right? So Frank says, why don't we figure out who the essential people are that actually have to go to work every day, police, firemen, sandwich deliverers, and why don't they get the vaccine first, because they're the ones that are out in front of people? I said, Frank, what part are you missing? Nobody cares about them. Why would we ever give it to them first? We don't do anything for them. He's like, what do you mean? You know what, Luke? I know I was tongue-in-cheek, but I'm pretty close to being right, I think, unfortunately.
My initial reaction is that the frontline healthcare people are crucial. Food production and transportation people are crucial.
What about the people that cut Jay Pritzker's lawn? They're crucial.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The transportation infrastructure, health or food production infrastructure, and stocking and everything else, all of that is and these are, again, as you noted, public facing positions. All of that, I think, is crucial. And I mean, I don't know how many, you know, how much of the vaccine is being produced. It's not going to be a trickle, though. And so I think my initial take on this, at least the way they're rolling this out, is that there's going to be a lot of this stuff available. And really the issue is going to be the logistics of getting
and who's
going to
take it?
The shots.
Are you, so we've been having this little Stocks and Jacks pool. I don't know if Matty told you last week or David, about which would you rather be, first person on the 737 or the first guy to get the vaccine?
I'd rather be the first person in the 737.
Well, it was running about even. Matter of fact, we had 40 people call in the one day.
Not even a close call for me.
Well, you see, now you remind, you know, I don't know if this is a compliment or not. You remind me of my brother, the president of PTI Securities. So he says to me last night, he goes, why would there even be a doubt? And I go, Dan, there's always a doubt. That's the way people are. Of course, Dan's got his CPA background and his MBA. You know, Dan's a brilliant guy. He says, let me get this straight. He goes, the airplane, it took them four times as long to say the thing was okay as they normally do, because they were scared basically bleepless to make another mistake. And he says, and the other thing hits the market like in one-tenth the time as normal. He goes, why would there even be a choice? You know what? If you put it that way, Lou,
So the airplane issue, even when the airplane did something wrong, the deaths, the crashes, were the result of crappy training, and it was certainly possible to recover from what was happening with the 737 MAX, even when you realize there was a problem. With the vaccine, there is no indication. You're not going to have any indication if you're one of those, you know, 0.01% or 0.001% or whatever it is. If you're going to be that member of the population that is going to have a side effect from the inoculation. And I guarantee you, there are going to be And there could be a significant number, maybe not a significant percentage, but a significant number of people who get sick from this thing. And it is good because I was involved in a vaccine, you know, dispute and litigated one of these things. So I dug the number, I tunneled down into the numbers on vaccines and what the reactions are. So the question's it's going to be a very interesting question as to how many people that you give this thing to have significant side effects and how that compares to their risk of catching the virus and having a problem with that.
Well, Lou, what do you think, since it's a two-step process, essentially two shots, one of the biggest worries is if anybody has any reaction to the first one, they're not coming back for a second one.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. So you're looking at an issue now. Are we going to enforce that? Are we going to enforce people taking the vaccine? This comes back to a discussion I think we had last week, but it's getting more pointed now that we're actually talking about sticking needles in people.
Well, the dark one.
People are going to have vaccine cards.
Right. The dark one.
And cell phone text messaging to remind them to get the second shot.
But we
How's
have.
The government going to enforce that?
Well, we have one of the guests on the show, Kenny Polcari, has freely admitted he was a COVID guy 6 months ago. And he got it. He's absolutely convinced at a hospital when he picked up his daughter. Now, I had it 3 weeks ago. Fortunately, had like no effects. Really, I had a headache for one day. Got the antibody test, and I'm convinced, Lou, since nobody around me had it, I didn't give it to anybody, or they didn't give it to me, that I had to go for a test at Evanston Hospital, and I'm convinced I got it there. It's the only place I went that week that was out of the ordinary. Now, which isn't, it's not 100% sure, but let's say I did. So I went, I didn't even believe the positive test because I really wasn't even sick. So I went and got the antibody test, and sure enough, there they are. You got the strong antibodies, my friend. And I said, okay. Now, I've gotten no phone call saying, you know, come and give blood. We can give your plasma to people. And now, I'm going to guess from Illinois, my numbers, Lou, are that 35 to 40% of the people in Illinois, since I did hear hard early, have had the COVID. They claim 700,000 have tested positive. The early studies in April and May and June, Indiana, a bunch of other places, said that 10 to 11 times as many people had it as the numbers were, because in those days they weren't giving people tests. So I don't think that the 10 to 11 is the proper number today. But even if it's four times, you're still pushing 3 million people in a state of 8. So we're talking, what, 35, 40%, right? So
yeah,
40%. So, but my point is, they're going to try and make me take this vaccine. And yet I have not, I don't know, nobody knows, how long the antibodies people have, mine or anybody's, will last. The SARS is about 2 years. Nobody knows, even after 2 years, whether or not, you know, if you get it, it's going to be a milder case, blah, 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 because they don't disappear all at once. There isn't a soul there. You know, George Pfizer can't tell me how long this shot's going to last. So, and how could he? Because they just developed it a month ago, for God's sake. I mean, so how is anybody able to say to me, Chief, you better go get this vaccine because it's going to last longer than your antibodies? Nobody knows that, Will. Why should I get this vaccine? I mean, and if it's 35% of the people.
Go ahead. Now the question now becomes, how are we going to enforce this?
Well, we got to
I think there's a lot of people like you who say, I'm not taking the shot.
All right, we move to another part. You got to move a little bit because we're losing you a bit. If you can scroll over a little bit.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Well, you know how you're going to do it, Lou? You're going to do it through oppression. We don't care what you've got. If you don't have an app on your phone saying you got the vaccine, you're not welcome in the opera. You're not welcome in a Cub game. That's what they're going to do.
Well, that's I think that's right, and I think that's going to create some problems. I mean, I saw Ticketmaster.
Yeah, they're first. They're first.
He's looking at saying you can't buy tickets unless you've got a card.
Right.
And we're going to give people vaccine cards, and suddenly this vaccine card, suddenly you're going to have to start revealing your health information.
Right. And it won't stop there, Lou. It will not stop there.
Oh, no. No, you know it's not going to stop there. This is the rollout of these cell phone apps that are supposedly involved in contact tracing. You know, the people here in Colorado put this application together that will alert you on your cell phone if you have a, you've possibly come in contact with somebody, which means you are consenting to having your location tracked by the government full time, and not just your location, but the location of people around you. And so, you know, this, I'm going, my gosh, this is Big Brother.
Yeah.
And it's going to be reinforced. It's going to be reinforced with these vaccine cards. And so here it gets even better. Are you going to need a new vaccine card every year? Because this virus is going to mutate.
Well, it'll be like, well, I shouldn't keep saying it's like the flu. It's more like a cold. But, who knows? I mean, it's going to morph into something else. I mean, how many times do you hear people saying, gee, that guy, he's got high blood pressure because he's fat. Yeah, but skinny people have high blood pressure too. No, he's got it only because he's fat. I mean, we're going down that road. The whole thought, we have to go for a break. The whole thought about when I paid, you know, $100 a month when I was with the Chevy commercial, my steps were quick and light when I was 22 years old and never saw a doctor for a decade.
Bob Seger, son.
I didn't care that my number really should have been 75 or 50 if you'd just taken people my age. I just said, okay, I'm paying for some of the older people. That's no big deal. When I get older, they'll pay for me. And all of a sudden, the deal's not there anymore, Lou. Oh, wait a minute. You smoked. You don't, which I didn't. You smoked. Oh, no, you got to be like triple. Oh, wait a minute. When I paid in early on, I didn't smoke. I didn't do anything. I was in tip-top shape. Well, I should have been paying $5 a month. But now we've got this thing where everybody feels that they can be in everybody else's shorts. And you know what? I don't like it. But people seem very comfortable with it.
Yeah. Well, roll to break, and we can continue.
Yeah, SP Futures down 2.25.
There are some interesting legal issues that arise in this.
SP Futures up 23. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term.
I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Go. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Lou Michaels. SP Futures down 1.25, and NASDAQ Futures up 25. Very slow yesterday. Looks like it's going to be slow today as we're waiting for news. Dow Futures down 33 over in Europe. We've got the DAX down 50. That's 0.4%. We got FTSE up 3, call that flat. CAC around down 10.2%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 8, call that flat. Shanghai down 7, call that flat. Hang Seng up 195.7. Are we going to be slow into the end of the year, or are we just lulling ourselves into a false sense of security? We're not sure about that. Yesterday, Dow was up 59, S&P was up 6, NASDAQ was down 6. So not much action yesterday at all. Bonds 0.93, which is high as they've been in a while. That's a 10-year rate, not the bonds. Bund minus 0.55. Japan positive 0.02. Japan, by the way, just be thankful you're not a Japanese bond trader. They haven't moved in like 4 months. Oil down 46 cents, 44.82. Brent down 39 cents, 47.86. Natural gas down 13 cents, 264. That's a pretty big move there. It's a 4.5% move. RBOB down a penny, 122. David goes to fill up his jalopy. He's probably got to pay 210. A week ago, he could have been under 2. Gold up 15 bucks, 1845. Silver up 29 cents, 2437. These guys are bouncing off their lows. Copper up a penny, 348. Who's ever doing traffic, weather, and sports? Let's do some traffic, weather, sports. Good sports last night.
Yeah, good morning. It's 636 in Chicago. Traffic this morning is running pretty smoothly. We do have one incident. There's an accident blocking the shoulder on I-80 East just before St. Francis Road. Weather today, Chicago currently it's 32 and clear out. The high will be a little warmer, 44, mostly sunny. For our Phoenix listeners, starting today, 53 and clear, high of 67 and sunny. In sports, we had a rare football game yesterday afternoon. The Steelers and Ravens. Steelers came out ahead 19-14. This Sunday, our Bears will be playing the Lions and the Cardinals will be playing the Rams. Back to you.
What, Michigan and, somebody got canceled. Michigan-Maryland.
Michigan game got, postponed, yes.
These guys are pushing the sixth number or some of these teams.
Right.
That's interesting. So, Lou, we were talking about, what were we talking about? We've got a million different...
We were talking about tracking people with vaccinations in order to do basic things like go to a movie or a concert or sit in a restaurant.
How is it, how could, this is not a professional doctor's opinion, since I have a lot of listeners that write me, actually a few, somehow or another, there must have been one lady in UK that somehow stumbled on us when she was over here, and anyway, she and some of her friends listen. Every one of them, Lou, there's like four of them, I get an email once in a while, every one of them has had the COVID because their husband worked in a hospital and brought it home. Now, Kenny caught his in a hospital. I think I caught mine. How can a hospital worker at this point not have had it or been exposed to it, for God's sake?
No, I think that's correct. And you know, this is, if you read any of the projections on pandemic studies, what was it? Dark Winter, I think, is the exercise they ran on smallpox. The first people that go down are your physicians and nurses and providers. And so it multiplies the impact of any kind of disease, contagious disease, 10 or 100 times, because the people who are treating you are the first people who are going to get sick, especially given a situation like this where we still aren't really sure exactly how it spreads, and we don't really understand the mechanism of the spreading, This kind of thing is going to happen. The hospitals, the treatment centers, the urgent care centers become hot zones for the virus.
Well, it's bars after 9 o'clock. Before 9 o'clock, it's okay.
Exactly. Or the virus understands that if you're in a tent rather than being inside a building, you're okay.
I have a quick question for you. I know I hate to, but I mentally stack my questions for you during the week as I listen to stuff. I don't know if that's fair or not, but your friend Margaret Brennan was interviewing the mayor of El Paso, which evidently has a big outbreak, and he was saying that, she said, well, how come you're not closing bars? And he said, well, I close them at 9 o'clock. We thought that was pretty good enough. And he goes, oh, why don't you just close them all together? No, we're closing them at 9 o'clock. And then he said something about we've done some research. Now, who the hell's doing this research? I have no idea. And he says, we think bars, restaurants, obviously at home. He said, but a lot of it's spread in big box stores. And he goes, but I can't close big box stores. And this is where I was, you know, some siren came over. I didn't hear what he said. Somebody on the federal level is preventing local people from closing big box stores because they've been determined by somebody to be, essential. How does that work, Lou? I mean,
that doesn't make any sense. That's not a determination that the feds make.
Well, that's my point. I missed that part, so I'm asking the question. It wasn't like, well, then she said, and probably one of the dumbest statements, and I actually like her, one of the dumbest statements I've ever heard, she says, well, that's why maybe you need to close more of the other places to make up for it. I go, wait a minute. You're going to come over and close, you know, Chief would lose swimsuit store because I can't stop the big box store, so we're going to, it's like beating your other kids because the one you're mad at isn't home. I mean, right? Jesus. But how do you do something like that? But I mean, the logic here is just escaping me all over the place.
Well, that's because there is almost no logic and very little science in what is actually being done in these places. I conduct these thought experiments on this as I work through the sort of the legal questions that surround how we're responding here. But I look at this and I think, okay, this is not that bad a disease. It's bad. It's significant, but it's not killing for one thing. It's not killing young people. It's killing old people. So that's actually a positive. Trust me.
Wait a minute. We're getting older.
If this thing was killing kids or killing teenagers the way the Spanish influenza did, we would be having an entirely different kind of response. And so the kind of sloppiness that you see here, the kind of, well, you know, maybe we'll close everything after 9 o'clock, or we'll stop, you know, we'll fence off part of a Walmart so people can shop there. All of this stuff would have gone by the wayside because you would be getting to see a genuine sort of regulatory panic. We haven't seen that yet. We're seeing regulatory incompetence, but if this thing was really dangerous, we'd be seeing a regulatory panic.
Well, Lou, where is there information, or I guess, you know, you and Kevin and some of the other people, whatever, I'm not going to lob any politics into this, but have been kind of on the media for a while, and I think more that they're more incompetent than driven by an agenda. But the agenda maybe is their own. I mean, I don't know what the agenda is, but there's people that, I mean, I sense the agenda that people that are getting paid at home are loving to tell the other people how they should behave that aren't getting paid, and it's kind of just the other way around. The people that are paying the other ways, other people's salary, should be telling them what to do. But it's not today's world. I mean, the teachers telling people they don't want to teach. Well, that's interesting. Nobody wants to go to work, really, do they? I mean, I guess where I'm headed is that, I mean, when you talk about this football, wouldn't you think someplace, somewhere, with all these, you know, games being canceled and all this stuff, that you and I should be able to find a list? Gee, in the last 15 weeks, there's been, 500 NCAA football and basketball players that have come down to COVID. You know, 50 deaths, 500 hospitalizations, or no hospitalizations, no death. I mean, there should be some kind of a clearinghouse of actually real information that people can actually make a determination on. And I tell you what, I get some stuff from my listeners and this coronavirus, you know, little hotbed that they send me all this stuff. I get some studies that make some sense in there, Lou, but it's really difficult to find any information that you can actually make decisions from at our level. Now, maybe the governor's getting it, I don't know, but...
I don't think that they are necessarily, or if they are, they're ignoring it. I think that, again, from, and I've said this in several social media fora, the biggest revelation in my mind in this whole pandemic situation has been the incompetence and venality of our public health officials and the people that they are advising.
Why? Let me interrupt.
I don't know why.
Let me interrupt, Lou. Why is somebody who's been in the armed forces, well, a long time now, right? I'm not going to say how long. Why shouldn't you, more than me, I mean, because I read about it, but you actually, you know this stuff. Why should you be surprised? We're essentially dealing with the delay, for lack of a better term, equivalent of peacetime generals. Why would you expect the people we just elected at every level, when now anybody can run, running is a joke, we don't care what somebody's background is, we don't care, as long as they're on a TV show or they're famous or something, they get in there or they got money. Why would you expect, you know, any different? I mean, George Marshall spent 2 years in the late 30s when he knew war was coming and Roosevelt told him to do it, running around and getting rid of the generals he knew were useless. So at least when we started the war, we had an officer corps, that's a German term, but at least we had people there that we could probably run with. I mean, everybody forgets all that. I mean, why would you expect the people we have in offices now, every county's making rules, and yet in every county the chief surgeon, this is probably unfair, probably couldn't get a job as a doctor somewhere, and he's just the mayor's friend. And why would you expect any different, I guess, my question?
Well, because I would expect, at least in terms of public policy, I would expect at least a modicum of neutrality with respect to the data, and a focus on the data and putting the data out there to people, saying, here's what we know so far, and here's why we're doing X. But we're not seeing that. We're seeing cherry picking on this data. We're seeing a focus on things that really don't matter that much, such as the number of cases. We're seeing a complete unwillingness to stand up and say, here's what we know and here's what we don't know. And so we're going to act, because we don't know this particular fact, we're going to act in a conservative way with regard to restrictions or masks or whatever. By now, you can look at almost any graph of cases or fatalities or hospitalizations, and you could try to figure out where masks got introduced or where social distancing got introduced, and you can't tell on the graph.
No.
It doesn't make an appreciable difference. And also, we've got a pretty good idea of how many people this lockdown is killing as a result of suicides, drug overdoses, delayed medical treatment, etc. But you don't hear anybody talking. The only person you hear talking about those numbers are people like Scott Atlas, who just left the president's coronavirus team. And that is the essence of public policy with respect to health.
And the people Biden have coming in.
How many people are dying as a result of the threat, and how many people are dying as a result of the cure? And if the cure is killing more people than the threat, then you have to readjust the cure.
How many people in nursing homes, if you asked them, would you like an L pill today, would say yes?
An L pill?
I would have thought, out of all the people, you would know what that was.
No, I don't.
An L pill was given in British intelligence during the war. If they muscled you into France to be a spy, they gave you an L pill. And if you had it in your mouth, if you swallowed it, you essentially pooped it out, but if you bit down on it, you killed yourself before they tortured you and told them what you knew. You know, I get a piece of information from you.
So to answer your question, I don't know. But the kind of debate that we need to be having in terms of, you know, cure or fix versus actual disease, that is the essence of public health policy discussion, and we are not having it, and I don't know why.
Well, the idea that nobody ever gets to visit somebody in a nursing home, I can't think. If that was me in there, I'd hope the place was over four stories, because I could get myself out of there and kill myself. The thought of me talking to a soul for a year.
That's having an effect.
Plus, and that generation's worse than us.
It's going to continue to have an effect.
That generation's worse than us.
They're
not used to looking at a computer and watching TV all day and saying that's cool. If they're not interacting, I can't imagine.
my mother not being able to play bridge or played poker.
Let's make it even worse. You have this kind of lockdown restriction being imposed, and then you have over, you know, whatever it was, over 1,000, over 1,200 senior and health policy officials and healthcare officials coming out in May and saying, you know what, it's okay for these people to riot and demonstrate on the George Floyd issue or whatever issue they're picking, as long as it's a social justice issue. It's okay for those people to do that, and we're not going to worry about whether they're infecting each other
right.
because of their cause. And you see that, and you go, well, then this isn't that big a deal. I should be able to go see my mother. I should be able to get together and celebrate a birthday or graduation or whatever. And why aren't these kids back in school? Because if the public health policy people are saying this, that it's okay to be in a demonstration for, you know, the accidental killing of a guy in Minneapolis, then what are we, what's the meaning of restriction? It can't be that bad. And so that's the message that's being sent. When your public officials are telling people stay home,
but Louis,
they in fact are going places. This all undermines the whole idea of a lockdown or restrictive policy, and that's if if you were to tap into populism right now, that's what's driving people crazy.
Lou, what's wrong with these people? When I say this seriously. You've talked to me now for years, and you know that I think we're going the wrong direction in our monetary policy. I think we're dangerously heading towards some kind of a cliff, that if a lot of good things don't happen, and hopefully they will, we're going to have a day when people have a day of reckoning, and a lot of these stocks, and in my mind, are 2 and 3 times higher than they ought to be, maybe 10 times, some of them. Yet I don't want to see it happen. I'd rather we grow into it in a stock that's $300 that ought to be like 50. Maybe it goes down to 275, and this, you know, we find a way to get rid of the virus, and the economy picks up, and 5 years from now it's actually worth 275, and it's still trading there or something, where nobody really gets hurt. I would love to see that happen. I honestly believe, Lou, that these, I'm going to say, small-minded people that we have in these spots, they really want it when Notre Dame kids rush the field, and all you heard about was everybody, how this was going to be bad and cause this big spike. I think those people actually want the spike to happen to prove themselves right. And to me, that's unconscionable in anybody, let alone, I mean, I'll be the biggest bitcher on earth if I think the wrong bolts are going into a bridge. I don't want the bridge coming down on somebody's head to prove me right. These people, if we don't have a spike after Thanksgiving, they're going to be mad we don't.
Yes.
We got to get those people out of there.
Again, it's a spike in what?
Because they didn't pay attention to them. And all of a sudden, where did we get a mentality? Even my maiden aunt, my mother's older sister, even she would conclude that if everybody wore the sweater in the wintertime, there'd still be a few people that get colds. these people, they're not even willing to concede that. There's people now that are absolutely, I heard a guy last week, the entire virus pandemic, would have been stopped if we just would have listened to them. And on day one, wore a mask. I tell you what, Lou, I got it, and the place I got it, I had a mask on the whole time I was there.
So yeah, it's the comment that I make with regard to, you know, we've got to double down on lockdowns and masks. My response to that is, well, this is the classic definition of insanity, which is what we're doing isn't working, so let's do more of it times two. You know, again, what is the goal? And you see the public health policy people moving the goalposts constantly. And I don't know whether it's a result of their political bosses coming to them and saying, you know, these case numbers are unacceptable, we're getting bad publicity, or whatever. But the issue is very clear that the count, the things that are dangerous, the way we're counting the virus, the way we're counting these cases, is likely not accurate, that the masking response is having probably very little effect, if any noticeable effect. The lockdowns are having an effect, perhaps, but the consequences of the lockdowns at this point are worse than the consequences of the disease and have been for some time. but nobody's talking about that.
Well, hard to quantify.
That failure is to my mind unbelievable.
They're never going to admit a mistake, Lou. But anyway, I have a question for you regarding the economy and stocks and so forth. What do you think? We had John Flanagan was talking about it this weekend and last week. If you're watching NCIS Los Angeles, the short lady, where she was talking to somebody and they were saying this was started out good and then it went bad and it's been bad ever since. And she slammed her hand down on the table and she said, "The last chapter has not been written. Change it. You still have time." What's going to happen? I mean, right now we're seeing the market with the Fed pouring money in, market's up, market's solid. Okay, which is good for me, good for my clients, good for everybody. Just got to be careful, in my opinion. Okay, so now, but you have cities going down. I don't know that I know a little bit about this because we did some studies on cities when I was at Pullman regarding railroad transportation and commuter rail and those kinds of things. I mean, if we end up, where the Macy's downtown goes under, okay, and then they just puke out the building and nobody wants it anymore. Well, the Macy's downtown is serviced by how many L lines, right? Now we don't need those anymore. Okay, now are we all going to go back there where we have to go buy a car again? Instead of having 300,000 people on trains, or we'd be driving around all over the place again because we're afraid to be on it. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine, Lou. I mean, going back to my grad school in economics, University of Chicago, if somebody were to give me the final exam now, this is what's happened. We've had this thing. All these downtowns are closed. Nobody's on this. Write an assessment of where this is all going to end, taken on a stock and flow theory. Lou, I can't even begin to look at the end of this thing. We're going to have all our infrastructure we spent zillions on in a spot where nobody wants to be. So we're going right back to the automobiles, which we tried like hell to get rid of with all the trains and everything like that for at least on a daily commute. We've got places positioned to where, Yankee Stadium sits on three L lines. Well, nobody wants to take the L anymore. Well, what does that do to Yankee Stadium? You can't drive there, for God's sake, and put 60,000 people in the place. I mean, what is the last chapter here if we don't somehow turn this bus around? I mean, who's going to – these places are worth half as much. Let's be charitable and say they're worth half as much, 425, the insurance exchange building, the Board of Trade building, without any traders in there. They're worth a third as much as they used to be. Okay, who the hell's got the mortgages? Who's not getting paid? We got a state that's broke, and all of a sudden these buildings got to be – downtown buildings got to be, what, 40% of the tax base in Chicago? I mean, I don't know what the number is, but John would know. I mean, we're not going to have that tax base. I mean, what are we going to do here, Lou? as you think about one thing affecting the next thing, the last chapter is a way away. And I tell you what, everybody's got this all convinced. Oh, don't worry. Nobody's going to go to a brick and mortar. You're just going to use Amazon. Wait a minute. Amazon doesn't pay any taxes in places. I mean, a little bit of property taxes. They don't do this. They don't do that. I mean, they don't buy Christmas decorations. I mean, I can't even begin to take this final exam here. Can you?
No. And so are we looking at a fundamental restructuring of the economy?
But what kind of hole? These
jobs.
Well,
this
situation. But we may find that part I get, jumping to what the world may look like job-wise. But the size of the hole to get from there to here,
That's my point. I mean, a lot of people are finding out they don't have to go downtown. They don't have to sit on the metro to get to their offices. They can do just fine from home.
Well, first of all, that's in the eye of the beholder, the just fine part. Because every place I try to access, the service is nowhere near as what it was when people were actually in the place. It's starting with the states and the cities.
I'm sure that's true. But from a perspective of what draws people into those large downtown office buildings, in terms of private sector, I mean, I've got relatives who are sitting up in the mountains right now, working, 1,000 miles from where their offices are, and nobody notices the difference.
I think people might, but let's get off that. We only got a minute. Let's get off that part. Let's say it's true. But it's like you swimming from one end of the pool, but you left the vortex in the middle. The fact is, if the downtown part doesn't pay any taxes, the guy sitting in Colorado someday somewhere is going to have to pony up to make up for the other places not paying it. He's not lost.
The states are going to have to figure out how to deal with that. And I mean, one of the things I find really interesting is a complete lack of, and I haven't seen any of this, but a lack of discussion or a lack of promotion by states of, hey, look at these gorgeous small towns that we've got here that you can live in and work from without having to go into the big city.
Well, Lou, don't get on. We only have 30 seconds. And I don't want to argue with my buddy. Don't think for a second, in the long run, that the person who leaves New York for Mayberry, that New York's deficit is not going to find him in Mayberry in some way, shape, or form. Don't think
well,
that ever.
Well, that was my next point, because there's discussion, for example, in California to tax people who were California residents but who leave, and either putting an exit tax on them or continuing an obligation to pay income tax after they've left the state.
What is it? Next week, let's talk about HPE leaving California for Texas. I wonder if they're going to get out without a string attached.
I the Californians are talking about it, and so is
New Jersey. Do you blame them?
New Jersey said that high wealth people leave who take a huge chunk of their income tax revenue with them, and New Jersey's talking about trying to keep the hooks into them.
Well, if last comment, and we'll let you dash. But what if the White Sox leave? Why shouldn't the city charge them for the two railroad stations they just put in there?
Yeah, or the stadium. Yep.
Yeah. All right, bud. Have a good week, buddy. S&P futures up 75 cents. Not much. NASDAQ futures up 35. Be back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, Homer Broadcasting Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomali, Mr. Dave Scantino on the board. Mr. Dan Janinas as well. SP futures up a whole 50 cents. NASDAQ futures up 32. The whole rest of the world is pretty quiet today. We're waiting for stimulus news, and we're waiting for vaccine news. We're not sure what we just have quieted down some. Dan, how are you, bud?
I'm doing great. How are you?
All right. Well, we did have a little move. That's why I was kind of anxious to talk to you this morning, especially since last week was Thanksgiving. We missed you.
Yes.
We have a little bit of bump in the 10-year rate from 0.86 to 0.92 or something in a couple days, so it's actually been a bigger move than we've seen in a while. When does that become something? I mean, obviously, your eyes are all over it, but when does it become something where you go, wow, I should start looking harder here. 1.5, 1.25. I mean, obviously 5 basis points isn't going to make you drool, I don't think. But it's, at least it's a, is it a trend or is it just a blip?
I don't know if it's necessarily a blip. I do think it's a trend. I just don't know how long, how far out this trend is going to go. And I do, you know, think at some point down the road we are going to start seeing a little bit of inflation. That's just part of the business cycle. It's likely to happen, but we're not going to get, I mean, we will, obviously we have been early in the sense that we've been buying short-term bonds, short-term high-yielding bonds, which would be protected from interest rate risk. So we, you know, from the point of view of looking at it as an investment, I'd say that we're, you know, this is the time to stay away because there, it is more likely that we'll continue to see higher rates in the 10-year. That being said, there's other dynamics going on that are, you know, contrary to that, where, you know, the there are some areas of the economy that we are seeing inflation, when certainly in food, and but then there are others in tech and some other areas where we're still seeing, you know, some weakness in pricing and not necessarily you know, this rapid sense of inflation. So what also will remind you that what also keeps our treasury rates down is foreign investing, and the world still looks at the U.S. as a safety zone, and that has not changed. So that may delay this increase in long rates. I don't see that happening anytime soon. What I do see, both locally, especially locally here in Florida, but what we have been following are housing trends and just the amazing pickup in housing and housing activity and mortgage activity, and you know, some of that is people taking advantage of, you know, because the mortgage rates trade off the 10-year treasury, the 30-year mortgage trades off the 10-year treasury. So there may be some you know, buy before the rates go up, but certainly there's a lot of demand both for housing and a lot of demand for mortgages. So I don't know at what point that would slow down. I think we have a long ways to go there. I don't know what point, you know, 1% looks good on a 10-year, because we're able to get more than 1% in our cash return on idle cash at for our clients at Interactive Brokers. So the only thing, when I look at 10-year rates going up, I look at it as, yay, I'm glad that we've stayed away from investing in that part of the, you know, that part of the curve. I don't think there's a lot of opportunity in that part of the curve.
What actually, two questions. One is yesterday, and again, you read these articles, you know how good the research has been. They're talking about new mortgages. You know, people are wanting new mortgages, like you just said, but also that the amount of the mortgages is going up. Looks like a record.
Yes.
Which to me means, because of the incredible disparity between what people are getting, meaning nothing, or what they're, you know, paying for their mortgages versus their credit card rates, where we constantly now are getting, well, I think back in 2007 or before that, people thought it was the largesse. It was, I won't say you, it was your bad brother-in-law that would go out and buy a boat or a car, and then all of a sudden a year later his house would be up and he'd roll into his mortgage cheaper than the boat loan or the car loan. I don't know that we're seeing so much of that now, but I think a lot of the problems, especially for people who maybe are entrepreneurs, their business issues have gotten their way onto their credit cards, and they're finding their way onto the home refinance on the mortgage, which I think is a pretty awful thing, but I suspect that's what's happening in a lot of spots, not everywhere, because why the hell would you be paying 20 when you can pay 4, right, or 3?
Right. I agree, yeah. I agree that is happening, and that's what my, you know, what I've heard, and I've even heard people doing home refinancing to pay off their kids' student loan debt.
Right. Well, the other question is, I mean, I don't know if you subscribe to this theory, but I took this class in college, and it was in one of the oldest buildings on campus where it still had the radiator heat then, and it was like all the air was like breathed before, one of those kind of places. Anyway, you sat there, and it was a history of economic thought. It was 2 quarters, and it was pretty fascinating regarding, you know, industrial revolutions and how you count. It was one of those basic things that when you, how you, you know, what do you count in GDP versus before and barter versus this. Anyway, so it was a real nuts and bolts thing of economy. But one of the things the guy talked about was that the real rate of interest, if you go back to like Greek times, hasn't changed. That it's always been, say, 2.5% plus or minus a half a percent. And even a caveman, if you lent him 100 stones, he wanted 100, you wanted 103 back at the end of the year, right? I mean, what do you think the long-term thing is to where, I mean, we've done this now for like a real long time where all the central banks have been involved, where if you and I have money, even though somebody else wants it to do something with it, they don't have to pay me, or the governments don't have to pay me. If a person borrowed it from you, I think you and I would still charge him, but that they've totally, I'll use the term, bleeped up that market to where you don't get anything. I mean, I don't even know what the long term, what the last chapter would be on that, but just, it seems the longer it goes, it's just not healthy. Other than that, I mean, you maybe know, I mean, what are we doing here? We're you know, it's 1% here, yet some other guy's paying 15 and some other guy's paying 12, and it just seems weird to me. And I don't know that it's how much it's participating in the haves versus the have-nots or what, but how long do you think that lasts? Or can it last?
Yeah, and no, I agree with you that, and we're actually more and more, you know, as time goes on here, we're getting more and more into that potential area of concern. You know, we're, that spread, if you will, is continuing to tighten. So from the point of view of the lender, it's not appealing. And from the point of view of the investor, it's, you know, for an investor like us, say if you're a bond investor, it's not appealing. But if you're the actual recipient, if you will, it's allowing, it's extending the, you know, it's part of the reason the housing market is being able to continue to operate. It's allowing companies to basically get money for very little, and that, you know, I don't see that trend stopping, although I think it's going to become less, I think it's going to become more and more difficult as that spread, if you will, continues to tighten. So what could get us out of that isn't probably going to be real rates, it's going to have to be inflation, and there's nothing that's really, you know, there's nothing in the near future that's not, there's no sense of acceleration, if you will, in the economy that we're anticipating anytime soon. Some of the factors, and I think it's predominantly technology, it's, I think we have to really look at what is contributing to the rise in the stock market over the past year, and with everyone saying, well, you know, you hear one complaint, or you hear one story saying that, you know, the economy's down, it's devastated and all that, and then you hear another story with, you know, depending on which group of companies you're looking at, saying, hey, things are better than ever. You know, if you're a Zoom or an Amazon or a Tesla, or even like the company I mentioned, the other name, Thunderbird, who just had record earnings again this past week. So there are a lot of companies that are benefiting and doing well, but you have to look specifically where that's coming from. Over time, we've had more of a mix. We've had more manufacturing. We've had more building and materials companies. We've just shifted the focus. And the question that I have is, can we continue to shift this focus and continue to say that our economy is going to be able to run at such thin margins, if you will, at such thin spreads for borrowing, if you will, in the near future? I mean, this has not impacted the banking sector. This go-round, if you will, has not impacted the banking sector like it did in 08. I mean, it's other areas of the economy that have been that impacted it, you know, namely the travel, transportation, hospitality, service, restaurants. So we're in a different environment, and you know, do the rules stay the same or not? And I guess that's the big question that I've been asking. And here, I also do agree with you that we're in a little bit of a period of respite here. Waiting for additional stimulus, waiting for vaccine, lame duck period, so there's not as much news on the political front. And I think people just sort of trying to keep that last win till the end of this year. I do believe things are going to look better next year. I think financing is not going to be difficult as it was 10, 12 years ago. in our last downturn. I think there is still capital. There's a lot of capital for financing, and you know, people are going to get good rates. Rates are historically low, so even if they are paying a little more on that spread in the short run, I'm not that concerned that it's going to stall the economy. It's going to be a while before we'll see a stall. And you're asking them, you know, 0.92, I would say it would have to go up to about 2% before we start seeing any significant sell-offs.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you wonder what that would, I mean, right now, I mean, there's a lot of clients that I have that, God, if you gave them a 3.5% risk-free rate, would want no part of this market at these
levels. Right, yeah, it's difficult to find that. I mean, we have found, you know, since we've been talking, that the, you know, obviously the equity markets have continued to increase in value, but, and had a fantastic November, but the bond markets and the corporate bond markets in particular, high yield market, has continued to see spreads narrowing. Even the last few days, we've seen our accounts do extremely well based on this, quest for yield, and people continue to look for yield as investors. And, I will give you one name that, I've mentioned once before briefly, but it's held up really nicely, and it's got a nice fat yield, and it's a company called AmTrust Financial, and it's a bond that pays 6 1/8 coupon that matures on August 15th of 2023, so it's shorter than 3 years, but your yield to maturity on this bond is greater than 8%.
So you're getting a discount,
and
wow.
Property and casualty insurance company, not exciting, like it's an equity play, but steady and stable with a nice fat yield. And those are harder, those names are harder and harder to find. There's fewer and fewer of those names in the inventory, but here's one that, you know, that we've done our homework on, that we've been in for quite a while, that's traded nicely over the last month, that has, I think, a lot of stability and a lot of yield. So there's that quest for yield is going to continue, and I don't know at what point people are going to be willing to say, you know, 1% in your checking account looks pretty good, but if you're able to get 5, 6, 7, 8%, that's not bad right now.
Oh God, no. I look at, but it percolates through the system, and that's always the part that is concerning to me. I mean, I've been doing a lot of, there's a bunch of earnings plays. We've been doing some of them, which leads me, I mean, the strong part of my game, Dan, is that, you know, I look at the index stuff, and I like to have people that are diversified. And I'm not ever really going to put my people in a lot of these stocks. But when I look at the earnings every day, I don't even know who these companies are. And I pick them up, and they're like $300. You know, like, okay.
Well, right.
Now, what's the revenue on these things? $30. I'm going, here's another one. 10 times revenue. They got no earnings. They may have been listed 2 years ago. I mean, it is. God, I feel like I rolled over and woke up and it was 2000 again. You know,
right.
Type of thing. And
yeah, exactly. Right. At the .com period. It's yeah. So I agree with you that we tend to stay away from. I get tempted by looking at those names that just continue to grow without earnings. You know, it's very tempting. It just isn't our style of management. And to stay consistent with our style of management, we may add some of those names here and there. I did have a client ask about getting into some cruise ship names, and where we have a little bit of an advantage, knowing maybe a little more, being here in South Florida. You know, I don't really share my client's enthusiasm. I think this is a longer workout than expected. I do think people are going to be excited to get back on cruise ships, but just because people are excited to get back doesn't mean that the financials of this company or that the operations of this company are going to be positive. I think you really have to believe in management. You really have to believe in their strategy. I would say the same for, say, electronic vehicles, and the same for other sectors. I mean, we went through this with cannabis industry too. I mean, there's all this excitement and then nothing happens. I would rather be riding a wave of a company that had earnings, or a wave of a company like Thunderbird that I've mentioned, that I just got off their earnings call for their first quarter of 21, and they have positive free cash flow, and all the partnerships that they're involved with have positive free cash flow. So that gets me more excited as a former bond guy that, you know, looks for opportunities on the equity side. But looking at companies that are, you know, the, I don't know whether it's going to be an all at once thing where, you know, because they all certainly can't make it. And right now, the ease of getting capital is there. The demand is definitely there. The excitement is there. And I think, if anything, the excitement is there even more now that we're approaching the sort of the final phase of COVID, if you will, or at least seeing a lot of, you know, we're seeing a brighter light now at the end of the tunnel. People are getting very excited and looking for all this opportunity. I'm not sure that this is the time to get too excited.
Well,
we
listened in yesterday. We had Kenny Polcari on. We had somewhat the same discussion. Kenny's star of a. You know Kenny.
Kenny and I. have very similar views on the market. I saw his piece about.
He introduced me to
whether Santa had already come or if he's coming. If he's coming soon, so I kind of agree with him. Yeah.
Well, you guys sound. He was talking. He said almost the exact same words you did. I mean, things are arguably getting better. You know, the future looks brighter than it did 6 months ago. I mean, I don't doubt any of that stuff. And I said, well, Kenny, in a normal world. I would be just as bullish as you, because right now the market, quote, should be down, you know, if it was just normal, probably 25 to 30%, and you and I would be sitting there going, and you, be saying, well, you know, things are getting a little better, it's time to dip a toe back in this, but the facts are, it's higher than it was when this whole thing started.
Pre-COVID.
And he goes, yeah, well, that's a problem. you would never have guessed that. I mean, the level is just... I mean, I don't know how you, I have problems valuing, and this, when I started, Dan, probably a little older than you, I started when interest rates were 15%, right? Or CDs were anyway. And the problem with these economic models, and I think both you and I look at the formulas and we say, these are really good, you know, they're good formulas, they're something you and I can trade off of. If the interest rates go from 6 to 7, we can pretty much, not to the dollar, we'll give you a tongue and verse about, you know, this stock's going to probably move down and this is going to do this and this building's going to drop a little bit. I mean, we can do all that. The problem is when you get to an extreme, you can't value anything. I mean, you and I can talk about having 4 beers, 6 beers. After winning the softball league, we might have 8 beers. Neither one of us can really talk about having 30 beers. I mean, at that point, what are you even talking about? I mean, how do you value something when your rates go from 0.5% to 0.25%? Is a thing worth infinite? I mean, you and I are probably saying, I don't know about that necessarily, right? I mean, we're at the edge here. It's hard to value anything.
It is. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm on the same page that when you approach the... We tend to sell into strength. You know, we have a core position of about 80% that we don't move, but on the names that we move around at the satellite position, we tend to sell into strength, and we think something gets overvalued. And it can happen on the fixed side. You know, it can happen with the bond or an equity. You know, if the bond is trading at a premium that's, you know, lower than what your expected, you know, what your expected value was, if you can get something off at 1% or 2%, and you can turn around and buy something at 8%, like AmTrust, we'll do that all day long. But there are fewer and fewer of those opportunities as we approach this period. And this is a difficult period to manage money. You really have to have strong conviction. You really have to look for those good ideas. You have to be in the right sectors or segments of the market. I kind of take it the other way, too. I sort of play the, you know, what's the worst-case scenario going into this year? Because it looks fairly rosy. I mean, it looks like we're in pretty good shape with the vaccine, potential stimulus, you know, I think an administration that's going to focus on sort of cleaning up some things that need to be cleaned up. The only thing on their list that if and when they get to it will be taxes. And the main thing that I think, incited this last bit of a rally that we've had here in the last few years has been corporate taxes, because across the board, the tax cuts helped every single company that we've invested in. That's a question that I have for every company. How are the tax cuts helping you? You know, and then I only heard fantastically is an answer.
Well, sure.
So even if there's you know, we go back from, you know, we go back up to say 28 from 21%, there will be an impact. And I'm not sure, I haven't heard too many people talking about that, but that is something. I was trying to look for things that could have impacts, you know, in a negative way on the market, and that is something that could have an impact. But I'm not sure that's on the Biden agenda. I'm not sure it's at the top of the list right now. So I'm not sure that people are focused on that. But there will be a focus on that at some point.
Well, you end up,
and it will have an impact.
You end up, Dan, somehow, if things, I mean, if everything's, well, I'll go back to when, you know, when I, it wasn't Mayberry, but when I was growing up, things were different. I won't say better because you didn't want to be sick for sure, but it was different. But the idea when things are actually growing at a 3.5% pace a year, 2.5, 3, 3.5, you really didn't bitch so much about somebody whose business went up 4 because he might have worked Saturdays and you went fishing on Saturday. I mean,
yes,
there was some,
right, exactly.
There was some, you didn't really complain about it. I mean, or somebody, you know, whatever, worked overtime every night or did something and you did. But the idea now that, well, when things aren't growing, you get this, and you can see it in the social unrest, and I'm not getting into who's doing what where, but you can generally see it in your population that most people right now, I think most people feel that if somebody's getting ahead, that either government is smiling on them, they got their head up the ass of government, or somehow or another, something random, that if somebody's moving forward, it's because somebody else is moving back, because the growth just isn't there. And I don't think they know what the economic numbers they're thinking about, but they're not wrong, Dan. If you have the companies doing better because of taxes, well, I'm not going to say this to you because. I mean, the corporations used to pay 17% of the taxes in this country. Now they pay 7. Okay, well, the other 10 is picked up by what? You and me. So guess what? They are doing better. But now next year, if all of a sudden you said, hey, you bleeps got to pay twice as much, and we lower Dan and Chief's rate by 15%, we're going to have a better year too, right? I mean, it's not like it's brain surgery.
In theory, that's what we think is happening. But that's I know in reality, perception is still different. And I think also how companies have been managing their balance sheet. I mean, they've been managing their balance sheets in a better way. But then again, yes, I think you have to look at those sectors, like say technology, that are going to be under even more pressure. So I still think what I'm trying to say is there is that question. There is some question surrounding taxes that we will approach over the next year, and that could be something that will, at least raise some eyebrows or,
well, Dan, I would
concern, because once we get through the COVID tunnel, there are going to be some other issues to address. And I'm confident that the current administration will handle those. They'll be fine. I don't think there's too many concerns, but the concern about taxes is definitely there. It's still on the table.
Well, if you were to take a couple of my buddies from college, somehow landed into the lawyer/accountant tax world for a couple of the big firms, and I'm going to say they were intimately involved in moving these companies overseas and the double Dutch sandwich and all the other crap where people essentially paid a lot less for a long time. And it's something that we've had cocktails, and I said, how do you keep a sober face when you're running this by some IRS guy and he buys it? He goes, you know, it's pretty tough. Some of the stuff we jammed by this guy's was unbelievable. Now, I'm going to say, Dan, that if you and I went back, and I'll bet you an adult beverage, we bring Kenny in, he gets one for free. If we were to take a list of those starting 20 years ago, maybe 22, 25 years ago, made a list of the top 300 of those companies that went overseas and had all their profit this place and that place, we'll find that those companies did spectacularly better than any of their peers, any of the rest of the people here on average, because they're paying 10% and everybody else is paying 32%. I mean, over a period of time, it's an amazing advantage. These drug companies, and that's where they got the money to buy all the other drug companies. I mean, I don't know how you ever come back from that. I mean, we're at a point where Pfizer, they're going to come out with this vaccine, and who the hell knows how they're paying off. They're getting such an advantage. But those guys, the stock went up 10%, and the chairman couldn't wait to sell it because this vaccine is going to be, what would you guess, $2 billion of revenue for these guys? Their revenue is 56. It's a pimple on the ass of an elephant. I mean, it's good for them, but it's like. I mean, so what? They make another $500 million. It's like you and I, here's $5 more. Okay, well, you know. But better not be a counterfeit 5. But it's a massive advantage. if you can cheat over a period of time, cheat. If you can have a less rate, a better rate than the other guy. But yeah, you're right. When you look at stuff, I'll bet that's one of the first things out of your mind. Out of your mouth to these companies that you're evaluating. Well, how are you guys doing tax wise? And if they're, and if they found a way to pay a little less, I got to believe you're all over them. Right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, I mean, that's definitely been, and that's been a, you know, it's been a theme certainly over the last few years. Paying attention. I also think it accounts for a lot of the increase in the value of the market that we've seen in the last few years. And like I said, talking directly to every CEO and CFO of the companies we invest in across the board, it's a yes, we are benefiting. So it's a, you know, it, will that continue? I guess is a question. But otherwise, I think there are very few concerns looking forward. I think that things are pretty bright. Whether that means the market's going to continue to track up or whether that means that a lot of that's already baked into the market, which is what I believe a good amount of it is, I think we're going to get, we're now approaching a sort of steady, less volatile period, and I think that's going to take us into the new year.
Dan, we only have a couple of seconds left, but I want to ask you, you continually say you have somewhat of an aversion, even with the rates the way they are, of hanging on to bonds when they're trading over essentially their par value. Is that just because you like getting rid of them there, or do companies find a way to somehow get rid of them earlier or something? Do you think there's danger trading a bond that's trading like 120 or 115, or you just don't like it?
There's you know, a couple of reasons. One, it's negative convexity, so it's just the way, you know, your capital is going to be pulled, your price is going to be pulled down the closer you get to maturity. So that's one problem. There's definitely a mathematical advantage to buying something at a discount. It also, the big thing depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for income, especially if you're in a muni fund, if you're a taxable portfolio and you're looking for income, then yes, go ahead and buy the premium bonds, because then it makes sense, because you want that coupon income, because you're going to be taxed at a lower rate, and you're also going to be, your primary goal is income. If you're in a portfolio where you have bonds and your goals are both income and capital appreciation, you're going to do better with bonds trading at a discount.
One more question.
A lot of bonds are callable. So as they approach their call date, you have that call risk that's going to pull your, it's going to put an upside limit on what you're able to,
what
you're able to make.
Are you ever worried about the, I'm going to say the screw up, and it's not a screw up, they do it on purpose, that somebody's going to have a lot of income based on the interest, but then can't take the capital loss because they have another capital gain to bump it up against?
Not this year.
No.
This is definitely not a year that'll happen. But no, we watch that pretty carefully.
Okay.
I mean, we buy, in most of the accounts, we're buying some of these smaller, and microcap stocks, and we don't ride them forever and ever. I mean, a few of them we've held on to for quite a while, but we're able to take some gains, and then, you know, we were able to also find, offset some loss in some other areas, whether it be, lost dividend income, you know, so we do tax loss harvesting, and we're doing that now at this time of year.
All right, bud.
So,
we'll talk at you.
Yeah, we're very much on top of that.
Good stuff. We'll talk at you next week. By the way, I need to talk to you long before next week. Matter of fact, I need to talk to you today. So I'll find you. SP Futures unchanged, Dan. Unchanged. When was the last time you saw that?
How much confidence up 30? Do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley. Mr. Dave Scutino on the board. Tells me to go ahead, and then he doesn't turn my mic on. I mean, it's a thing from the past. He and Matty are taking over. Chiefs out. You never know. You never know these days. As the Cubs dumped two number one picks, and the Sox dumped a number one pick, so anybody could be out these days. SP Futures up a quarter, NASDAQ Futures up $24. David, a thought from the day from Don Cornelius. Who's he?
Don Cornelius.
Host and producer of Soul Train. You never watched it?
No, I don't remember that.
It's always a pleasure.
I wasn't a Soul Train fan.
No, it's always a pleasure to find something that matters.
Yes, it is,
yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, yes, it is. We have in the pre-market, we have Dow down 33 over in Europe. Quiet all over the place. We're waiting for vaccine news. They're going to start giving people vaccines like this week or next week in Britain. See how that goes. And we've got this stimulus package that's bumping its way through. Now it's gone from 900 million to down to 500. So I'm going to say somewhere in the middle there they're going to do something with. But we're still hanging up a lot on whether the Republicans don't want to bail out so many states. I think that's still kind of the hang-up, but anyway. DAX down 66. That's a little more than it was earlier. It's 0.5%. FTSE up 21.3%. CAC around down 21.4%. I wonder if this FTSE been strong this week because they're going to start popping out this vaccine and all of a sudden they're going to tell people they're healthy, even if they are or they aren't. That's, I think, that's kind of an editorial comment. Nikkei up 8. Call that flat. Shanghai down 7. That's 0.2%. Hang Seng up 195. It's 0.7%. Sorry. Yesterday, the Dow was up 59. S&P up 6, NASDAQ down 6, so a very slow day. Bonds, 0.93, so that's appreciably higher than the 0.85, 0.86 we've been talking about in terms of percentages, but in terms of movement, it's not much. It's 6 basis points. One minus 0.54, a little bit closer to zero, but still kind of a ways away. Japan, positive 0.02, where it's been forever. Oil down 46 cents, 44.82. Brent down 39 cents, 47.86. Natural gas down 13 cents, 2.64. That was pushing $3 like a couple of weeks ago. RBOB unchanged at 123. Gold continuing its rally up to 1843. It was in 1780, like 4 days ago. It's up $13. Silver up 11 cents, 24.19. Copper continuing to creep at 350. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Good morning. It's 7:38 in Chicago. Traffic still fairly light today for a Thursday. Not any major incidents to be concerned with. Weather today, Chicago, 32 and clear. The high is going to be mostly sunny and 44. For our Phoenix listeners, 53 and clear at the moment. A high of 67 today and sunny. In sports, we had a rare Wednesday afternoon game where the Pittsburgh Steelers defeated the Baltimore Ravens 19-14. College basketball in the Jimmy V Classic, Illinois drops one to Baylor, 82-69. Northwestern wins 92-49 against Arkansas Pine Bluff. We did have some baseball news yesterday. The Cubs non-tendered Kyle Schwarber and Almora, and the Sox also non-tendered Rodon. All three were former first-round draft picks.
That's how we do on first draft picks. So what happened to all the Bears' first-round draft picks? They're all gone, too.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're always gone.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I think I have the answer. Dumping somebody like that,
Frank's ready.
Isn't that the same? Maybe Frank, how are you?
Good.
If you just cut somebody like that or failed a tender, which means you don't want to go to arbitration with them, that doesn't pop into one of those extra picks, does it? Like if you lose a guy in free agency, I don't think it does.
I don't think it does either.
Anyway, something. But it is significant that as soon as Theo's gone, two of his number one draft picks get booted. So, see ya, Theo. Take your two guys with you. Just saying, you know. It would be interesting if the Cubs picked up on Rodon. Now they're saying the Yankees might want Schwarber. Somehow or another, the Cubs mess with some of these guys' minds. I don't know what they're doing, but they have not had any sort of progress on a lot of these people in 4 or 5 years, which, you know, used to be the knack on Kelly at Notre Dame, but now he managed to get himself some assistant coaches where I think he's doing way better with that. I mean, what do you think? I mean,
much better.
Yeah, I mean,
Herbrick had the come to Jesus talk with him, 2017 or 2018?
Yeah.
After one of our beatdowns by Alabama.
Yeah, basically said you gotta let somebody else do some of this stuff or whatever, but they've, I heard him talk the, not this is a Notre Dame show, but I heard him talk the other night regarding, a while ago, not the other night, and he was saying we've decided we know what we are now, that we're a team that can get a really good offensive line, we can get some good defensive players, we get a skilled player here now and then, and if we get a quarterback that knows how to handle all that stuff, we can pretty much compete with people, and it's at least they've found an identity, and they put more.
Well, he threw out the tight ends too.
Yeah,
and Notre Dame is so deep there. Also, they wanted tall offensive linemen. They know what size and body type they want.
Well, I think the idea that if you have three tight ends, finally they're putting all three of them on the field. Because it's the same. I mean, I had a softball team forever and a half-ass coach basketball and half-ass coach touch football on Sunday mornings. And it's all about, I mean, if you say, well, what am I going to do? I got two centers. Put your best people out there. Let the other team figure out how to handle them. Right? Why should you worry about it? If you got two tight ends or three tight ends, let them try and cover those guys with their 5'9 quarterbacks. Why is it your problem? It's theirs.
Did you watch the game yesterday?
Yeah, a little bit. I watched part of it.
That Claypool looks like he put on 20 or 25 pounds,
yeah,
which makes him a tight end.
Yeah.
With 4.5 or 4.4 speed.
I watched that, and I watched some of the Gonzaga game, and the kid looked to me like a freshman who's all world, Scruggs.
Mm-hmm.
He looked to me like he might have yanked an Achilles tendon. And I'm sitting there, oh, that poor kid. Turns out the guy's jogging, he's back in. I mean, I don't know why they let him back in, but they did. And then I didn't make it all the way to the end of the Illinois game, but Illinois looked like they were pretty decent, and obviously Baylor's real tough. So there were four really good teams. And I'm not a huge Huggins fan, but
Huggins, he had one guy who was going to graduate from Cincinnati, and he ended up getting thrown out of school because he and his roommate tied somebody to a watches lounge and were burning him with cigarettes and lighters because they wanted to know why he stole their drugs, their pot. So this is the kind of school that Coach Huggins is. No, he's unlikable.
Yeah, he's someone, I think so. I mean, I've always thought that. But you know what? Wherever those guys go, they manage to get people to go with them. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Well, so Huggins is one of those guys that, unfortunately, I keep track of, and I'm always astounded by his lack of morality, for a better term. He's a good coach, though.
Well, you know, this guy from Illinois doesn't seem like he's, you know, I don't know. But, I mean, he got a couple guys out of Chicago, which is somewhat unusual. But he seems like he's amassing some people down there that, and he doesn't look like Mr. Crook. I mean, at least he doesn't yet.
No, he doesn't. Not at all.
Is there...
Which is sort of, I mean, we grew up with the Paola scandal of the 60s at Illinois, and they've had a rough time getting past that from a Big Ten standpoint.
Well,
that's
the
50 years.
The best line ever was, remember Jerry Tarkanian at UNLV?
Yes, of course.
He always had, you know, he always was clouds around his program. Because UNLV, have you ever been there? UNLV had, you know, UNLV had two. I used to, when I was out there, this is back when I was, my steps were quick and light, Frank. I found the place. They had an incredible workout facility outdoors. They had an incredible, a really nice all weather track. That's back when I used to run some. And then they had all kinds of ancillary outdoor exercise equipment things. We didn't even need a gym. There's all kinds of really stuff you could do. I mean, there are people there in really good shape, way better than me, but. I used to go over there for an hour and work out and come back to the motel. I mean, it was nice, or a hotel or where we were staying. But it's a small urban sort of campus, and they had two things going. They were, for a while, they were the only school in the country that you could get a master's degree in hotel management. I remember that because when I was at the University of Chicago, University of Chicago was the only school you could get a master's, an MBA in hospital studies or hospital management or something. Now, of course, everybody's probably got both of them, but...
The other hotel school was Cornell.
Yeah, but that wasn't until later, I don't think. Might have only been a year or two were they the only ones, but I thought they were unique for at least a little while. That might could be wrong. Anyway, so the best line was his... he had one of those... oh, God, how can I say this without being politically correct? He had one of the very, shall we say, somewhat outspoken big hair wives. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, is that politically correct? How else can I say that, Frank? We know what we're talking. We know the type. Little jewelry, big hair, kind of outspoken type of thing. So the NCAA was always all over his ass, basically because he was trying to compete with the UCLAs of the world, which were the darlings, right? So they're all over him about, you know, maybe paying this guy and this and that. And he was always under suspension. So one day the wife comes out and she goes, you know, this is all BS. What are we doing here? He goes, we go play UCLA. All their guys come in wearing fur coats, and they all live off campus somewhere on the beach. Our guys live on campus, and they're wearing letter jackets. We're the one paying people. She goes, who's kidding who? I'll never forget that interview as long as I live. I mean, talk about the truth, huh? Out of the words of whatever. And, you know, meanwhile, they're all, but he was a hell of a coach, and he got, they made it to the Final Four. I don't remember.
I think they did. They had some pretty darn good teams.
Yeah, they had some good teams, and he was like the Boise State of basketball. I mean, you just don't fit in here with the big kids, right? You don't belong in with Kentucky and UCLA and Indiana at the time. I mean, the pecking order was in. Duke was always up there. North Carolina. I mean, those were the cream of the crop of basketball.
Oh, don't forget North Carolina State. Talk about a dirty coach, Norm Sloan.
Yeah, well, they were there actually when you and I were in school. South Carolina was a big power. Then you had the Georgetowns, and you had the, you know, those kinds of people. But anyway, you mentioned something yesterday on the phone. We were talking that I thought was so politically correct, and it just shows how far you are afield because you actually care about some people. You were actually thinking about giving the vaccines first to the serfs that actually work all day and deliver the stuff to the people like Jay Pritzker that stay in their big apartment. Now, Frank, that's not going to fly. Just saying.
Well, that's where I would start after the first line people, the people that
the guy who delivers
dock our show,
the guy who delivers the Amazon, the guy who's driving the bus, the police, the fire, the guy who delivers your sandwich. Why would we ever do anything for
my
them?
My post office person.
Yeah, why would we ever do anything for them?
Lots of them belong to unions and. No, we aren't going to do anything for them.
No, you, see, you and I might. That's why we're doing this show and we're not like governor or something.
Oh, we have lots of reasons we aren't governors.
Well, whatever. We don't want to run for what, but that would be a very small reason, because we did run, nobody would know we were running. But I mean, nobody thinks. I think we've become in this day and age where politically correct and Black Lives Matter and social justice, I think we've gotten more separated in the last 5 years than closer. I mean, it's just a feeling I have. I don't think we've come closer at all. Nobody cares about the bus driver. Nobody cares about the people in the fire department next door. I mean, nobody cares about the bartender or the guy who's... Does anybody want to tour a kitchen at Jimmy John's or whatever and find out if there really is 6 feet apart for the 10 people that are working in there? I think you'll find the answer is no. Just saying.
Well, I've seen some kitchens because we can drive in the carry out kitchens. Those are never social distance. I've worked in them as a kid.
Well, what were you, the onion chopper?
Oh, no, I'm not allowed to have knives.
Oh. you were the dishwasher? What were you? So you know what the...
I was. The first job I ever had was as a dishwasher at Villa Capri. It was on the corner of Ironwood and South Bend Avenue. Not South Bend Avenue, Edison in South Bend, right next to Eddie's.
My first job was at Hilo Foods, and I went there on a Saturday, and I bagged for 8 solid hours. Well, the problem is, I was 6'3", and the ladies who were the cashiers were like 5'3", and the spot for the bag was at their height. To say at the end of the day, my back was killing me. Understatement. It's at $1.60 an hour, and after 5 weeks of this kind of lousy place to work, the guy says, "All right, we like you. We're going to give you a raise to like 170." And I'm like, "Thanks, thanks." I did better mowing lawns, for God's sake. Just saying. But
I made 45 cents an hour on my first job.
What were you doing? What year was this?
Cleaning dishes. I cleaned a grease trap in an Italian restaurant for 45 cents an hour. I did it with my buddy, whose parents owned the restaurant.
Oh yeah, well that's different. Yeah, I mean, so
was minimum wage.
You at least got fed, probably.
Yeah, but I was still skinny.
Well, yeah,
slim.
So,
slim.
What do you make of the fact that our most lefty on the show probably and our most righty are both avid swimmers every day? You and Lou.
I don't know what to make of it. Probably it shows that spending that much time in the water damages somebody's ability to reason.
That's why your book...
All you can do is think strange thoughts or sing songs to yourself.
That sport was never social enough for me. Anyway, hey, we've been dodging a little bit. I was kind of hoping... You came out, we can zero in this a little bit more. We talked to Kenny, talked to Dan Janitas today about, you know, with the vaccine coming on a bigger scale, and despite where you think the, quote, market is, whether it should be here, should be lower, should be higher, who the hell knows. But the fact is, probably, things look a little better going forward than they did in June or May. Not as many people on a percentage scale. Not even close are dying. We have, you know, more cases and people in hospitals, but mostly everybody's walking out. You know, of course,
because we figured out how to treat it.
Well,
I'm not trying to get down on anybody for not treating it optimally to begin with.
I also think it's kind of, I think it's morphed a little bit into more contagious and less deadly. But still, if you catch it when you got something else wrong with you, it's a problem. I mean, it's not. I hope people don't think I've ever made light of this, because I don't think I ever have. Because all I did was see in China about how the old people were, the bodies were going out the back side of the house and they're picking them up and cremating them. I never wanted to see that for those people or anybody, let alone our people. But anyway, I guess where I'm going, Frank, is the size of the hole between the buildings, the people, the businesses, even the individuals, like Carl was talking about, that Florida was so bleeped up on their unemployment that, you know, people applied in like May, and in October got like a $15,000 check. But by the time they did, they were already out of their apartment. They already got a horrible credit score. They're probably living in their parents' basement. What are you doing in Florida when your parents don't have a basement? You don't even have a basement to fall back on. Anyway, there's damage all along the way. To try and get some sort of an estimate on the damage – You know, what? How many of these buildings downtown? Is there going to be a foreclosure? Is there going to be a tax relief from Illinois? Is there going to be tax relief from Cook County? If that happens, are they going to have to raise everybody else's tax? I guess what I'm saying is how big, even if things look like 2 years from now, you know, we're back somewhat okay on a current basis, how big is this hole? I get this horrible feeling this hole is like really, really big. And I hope you're going to tell me it's not, or I'm focusing in on the things around me more than I should, or something. Because I would love to be wrong here, Frank, but I think the hole is still expanding to a tremendous amount. I mean, am I wrong?
No, well, the hole may not be expanding, but it's big. I mean, the biggest volatility event we have going on right now that I'm waiting for is what are we going to do when unemployment runs out on December 27th.
According to what I read last night, in kind of both versions of this bill, McConnell's, which is the cheapest one, not saying it's the worst one, I'm just saying right now it's the cheapest. There's the $2 trillion Democratic one, which appears to be totally off the table.
No, they came in with $900 million recently.
Well, the alleged bipartisan group came in at $900.
Yes.
So the Democrats said that can be our starting point, which means we're down to 900 from 2.3 billion. So that's what I'm trying to say is they've come down essentially $1.4 trillion. Now
the president was at 1.9.
Okay, but I'm saying right as of last night, I'm just trying to give
the leaders say the stimulus package should be.
Well, what I'm saying is as of last night, the lines appear to be like about the sporting show. Now McConnell's 500. In the 500, he has an extension, I believe, of unemployment. Does not have a bonus number. So, and it is, correct me if I'm wrong, when you pay your unemployment and when PTI pays out a check, there's going to be an unemployment piece on there. And oh, by the way, if you are an independent contractor and you get a 1099, you have to pay it yourself. Okay. Little known favor college rule that if you cut grass for somebody and make $1,000 and that person wants to deduct it and doesn't pay you cash, if he sends to the state or the federal government that you made $1,000, you owe 150, even though, I mean, your lowest part is a 15% tax bracket, because that's what unemployment, Medicare, and Social Security are. So the government's going to want to check for $150 out of you, even if you only made $1,000. But having said all that, the unemployment is basically the business of the state, correct? Up until 6 months. Then they toss you off the rolls. If there's in times of woe, or times of bad times, or times of woe, if the federal government says, we want to expand that to a year, I don't know if it's all the amount or some percentage, Frank, they will kick the other 6 months' worth to the state, correct? So the state picks up the first six, and the federal government picks up any extension. But it's at the same rate that the state normally pays out. So what McConnell's talking about is keeping extending that from whatever it is to like a little more. I don't know, a little more, a lot more. But what they did last time, they also said, oh, by the way, whatever your state's paying, we're going to put $600 a week on top of that. That's what they did in May or June or whatever that other thing came out. That ended at the end of July, I believe. End of June or end of July.
Somewhere, maybe the first week in August, I think.
Yeah, that was your last check there. So in the Democrats' original plan, I don't think it was $600, but I think they were tossing around numbers like $450. So you would end up getting the state number, which is probably $200, but you got $400 on top of that, so you actually got $600. That's why people were complaining that a lot of people on the lower end of the scale, it came down to $22 an hour, Frank, if my memory serves correct. And if you look at a list of all the people and how much they make, an awful lot of people don't make $22 an hour. So a significant part of people in unemployment...
That in and of itself may be a problem.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm saying the significant amount of people on unemployment were making way more, as much as double, as they ever made on with a regular salary. So that's why some states were saying it's hard.
Yeah, but it was ephemera. It was kind of.
I know.
You know, people have better should have better things to worry about.
I never said
than
I
other agree, people.
Never said I agreed with them. I just.
I know.
I just letting people know where the different parties are now. The Democrats in the 900 million or this the bipartisan 900 billion. I think there's some kick there, Frank. It's probably an extra 200 a week or something. It's not six.
It's 300 a week.
It's 300? Okay. And I don't know for how long. But it's not, it can't be for that long. I mean, what, 4 months or something? 3 months?
6 months.
6 months? So, I mean, so there's somewhat of a kickback up in there. So those, as you look at the plans, all I'm trying to do is trying to explain to everybody what's in the different plans. And was I right pretty close there or no?
Yeah, as close as we really know.
Right.
You know, do you really, you know, I don't trust McConnell on any level. I actually trust him less than Pelosi and Schumer.
Which is hard.
And I'm not saying I trust them, but I don't know what's really in these.
Well, the big hang-up appears to be, I've read in many different spots, is the Democrats want the states themselves to get bailed out. And the Republicans are dead set against bailing out states they think are doing a basically a bleep-up job. And I'm not so sure where I fall on that, Frank. I don't know,
given the money that somebody like Illinois pays out, you know, the net cash outflow for other states, I'm probably for it for if give back some of the extra stuff you pay.
I don't have a problem with that, but I'm saying Illinois' problem.
Getting more money from the government, don't give them anything.
Well, but I'm saying
they won't do that because the red states, well, when you look at that.
Well, we'll talk about it some more on Monday, but I mean, I don't think the federal government has any business bailing Illinois out on this pension fiasco they've boxed themselves into. I would want to pay for that if I lived in Indiana, the man in the moon.
Yeah, but they bail out red states with army bases.
Well, that's we used to have a couple here. Anyway.
And so, we close them down because we're a blue, like Chinook Air Force Base. Yeah, I know that.
Real quick on the market. We're slow again today. I don't think we make it to the end of the year slow. What do you think?
No. We have the 27th coming up. We're going to get the feedback on the vaccinations. Both huge things.
Well,
we'll wait.
When's Britain starting? This week?
I think they started yesterday.
Really?
Showed people getting shots.
So where do you stand? Are you going to get the shot first or fly the 737 first?
Oh, I'll take the shot first. I don't need to fly a 737 max.
Okay. All right, bud. We'll talk to you on Monday. SP Futures up all 75 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 17. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.